Welcome back to another episode of Better Than I Found It, the podcast all things college golf. You're listening to Mike McGraw, the men's golf coach at Baylor University. Joining me today is former OSU golfer and current LIV golf star, Taylor Gooch. Now, Taylor and I obviously discussed his recent hot streak on the LIV golf tour with wins in Australia and Singapore, but he also is really excited about an upcoming LIV event, which will be in his home state of Oklahoma in Broken Arrow at Cedar Ridge, May 12th through the 14th. Taylor and I discuss at length his foundation that he's created and the various charities that are benefiting from that foundation's interests. It's great for a coach to see one of his former players who truly wants to give back and really wants to make a difference. I hope you enjoy this interview. Okay, Better Than I Found It listeners, let's welcome a former player of mine, a great guy, and one of the hottest players in all of professional golf on any tour, Taylor Gooch. Thanks for joining me for a second time on Better Than I Found It.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here again. Thanks for having me, Coach.
Yeah, you know, it's fun for me just to get to do this. I've been doing it for college golf, and specifically I've had a ton of coaches on because a lot of really experienced coaches give young coaches some wisdom, if you will. And so it's been a college golf podcast, but part of that is former players that I coached. And so, you know, it's really, really been fun to watch your career kind of take off. And I remember when you won your first Korn Ferry event. I remember when you got your PGA Tour card, and then all of a sudden you're finishing top 25 every week on the PGA Tour and had a great start. You never really struggled like a lot of guys struggle coming out of the gates, and you seem to have just progressed the whole way through. So for me as a coach, fun to watch. What's it been like as a player?
Yeah, you know, I was talking with someone recently. Who was it? I forget who I was talking about. I was talking with someone recently. It's, you know, golf is just, it's so unique in the sports world at the professional level because, you know, I mean, it's truly a journey, right? Like, you know, we get in, you know, enthralled by the quick, hot flame stories, you know, the kids that, you know, the Jordan Spieths and the Justin Thomases who came out, you know, firing, and they're phenomenal players and had such incredible success so quickly. And, you know, that's not the norm, you know, and it's easy to forget that because it's highlighted so often. And so, you know, I've done a good job of, I hate to be so cliche, but trust in the process, you know. Yeah. Like I've you know, continued to figure out how to get better, you know, week in, week out, month in, month out, you know, year after year. And I take pride in that because, you know, none of this is by mistake. Everything, you know, is calculated, and, you know, I'm putting my all into it. And, you know, of course, we all wish we could play better sooner, quicker, faster. And I wish that I would have had more success early on. But I'm thankful in the way everything has progressed, and, you know, it's allowed me to build a really good foundation within my game, so that the lows and the struggles are not so low and not, you know, so long, and I'm able to kind of, you know, get back on the horse pretty quickly when things get a little bit off. And, you know, I attribute that to, you know, some of the struggles early on in my professional career that, you know, kind of built some grit within my game.
You know, you mentioned Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas. We could throw in Jack Nicklaus, Tiger Woods. There's been a few that come out like incredibly hot, and it makes it ruins it for everybody because it's not an easy process. What you've done is what coaches ask players to do in college: just get better every week. I remember when I had Webb Simpson on here a few years ago, it was like he thought he was failing at Wake Forest. He really did. He just thought he was failing. He'd been there a year and a half, and he was a number one junior player. He came in, he wasn't that great for them. And he went in basically in tears to Jerry Haas's office and said, "Coach, I'm so sorry. I failed you. I'm on an Arnold Palmer scholarship, and I just haven't done anything." And he said, Jerry was brilliant here. He asked him one question. He says, "Hey, tell me something, Webb. Are you better than you were when you were a senior in high school?" "Oh, well, yeah, I'm a lot better." He said, "Well, then you're doing what you're supposed to do. You just keep getting better." And Webb said it just took the weight of the world off his shoulders. It's like, okay, he's right. I am getting better. And Taylor, you came out. I complimented you before you said, hey, Justin Thomas and these other great players. It was like, I think you've done it kind of a pretty cool way. You kind of got on the Korn Ferry Tour and then you established yourself and then you won. And then you got on the PGA Tour, you established yourself and then you won. And you went to the LIV Tour, you established yourself and now you've won a couple of times. It's like you are figuring out a way just to keep progressing your game. And I think if every junior golfer would just look at it that way, they'd be a lot better off.
No, I agree. And that's why I always use the term. I mean, it's a journey, you know, when you're 20, 22 turning pro and, you know, you see everyone on PGA Tour and live and having all the success. And it's like, you so badly want that, but you know, that so rarely happens overnight. And so, you have to figure out a way to, kind of alleviate that pressure. I like what you said about with Webb and how that kind of took the weight off of him, because if you can figure out early, the earlier you can figure out that, you know what, I just need to continue to progress. I need to continue to get better. I can't be so focused on the results, the outcome. It's like, if you got to fall in love with the day-to-day stuff and, you know, how do I wake up next week knowing that this week I've done everything I can to progress. And, you know, that process, that mindset, going about, you know, your business and your game in that way, there's just no way you're not going to be successful if you take that approach to it, you know? And because at the end of the day, you're just going to make progress and you're going to look up. And it's like I tell people all the time, it's like all of a sudden I looked up and, you know, I was on Korn Ferry and all of a sudden I looked up and I'd won. And then, you know, I was on the PGA Tour and it's like all these things kind of, it felt like they happened, you know, out of nowhere, because like I wasn't focused on it. Like that wasn't my end all be all. Like I was so into the day to day, the week to week, and just putting my head down and getting better. And I figured out, you know what, if I can do that, good things are going to happen.
You know, I remember when you were in college and you were a freshman and you, it was crazy because I don't think we even had this conversation early on. You just started playing and you got in the team. You got in the lineup pretty early, but there were times when your game wasn't quite as good and you got thrown back into qualifying. Every time I threw you back into qualifying that freshman year, you came out fighting like this alley cat. And I remember one time at Stillwater Country Club, we had somebody that had a class in the afternoon or something and had to play early, and you knew his score already and you knew the score you had to shoot to beat him. And it was 62 and you shot 62 at Stillwater Country Club. So I'm just saying, because, and I bring that up because 2 weeks ago you shot consecutive 62s. And when you heard, when I saw those numbers, I thought, no way, you can't shoot that score. You can't do it 2 days in a row. You can't be leading by 10 shots. I think the big elephant in the room right now is, let's talk about Adelaide in Australia a couple of weeks ago. Wow, what a week.
Yeah, I mean, it was, like I said, it's, whenever you shoot a low score like 62, you kind of, it's almost known the next day is just not going to be easy. You know, it's like you so often see guys that shoot low score and the next day, you know, anything under par is almost like a good day, because it's just so hard to back up a great round with another good or great round. And yeah, I mean, I've obviously never shot 62. The closest I've gotten was at the Oklahoma State stroke play back in college. I shot at Jimmy Austin, I shot 63, like 71, 62. Mm-hmm. So I've definitely never backed up a low round like that with another low round. So it was a special couple days. You know, it's, I keep telling people, I've been feeling like I've been playing some really good golf for a while, and it's not really been reflected in my results. And I feel like I've just been so close, and you know, it's been a true test of patience and kind of what we're talking about. It's like, I feel like I'm doing better than what I feel like I should be doing and shooting and having lower scores than what I have been having. And it's like, it gets frustrating at times, right? But if you just know that, hey, just stay patient, control what you can control, focus on the day to day, like eventually it's going to come out and you're going to have good things happen. And so my swing coach Boyd Summerhays and I, you know, we talked about it after the week finished, and you know, he was like, it was just good that you finally were getting the scores that you deserved. You know, we know that, you know, in golf, the score at the end of the day isn't necessarily reflective of the quality of golf, you know, and you always hope that you can get as much out of the round as you want, but that doesn't always happen. And so it was nice just to have, you know, a week where, you know what, I've been playing some good golf, some really good golf at times, and now, you know, the scores are coming. So that was great.
Well, you know, you mentioned Boyd, and it was funny. I interviewed him about a week ago, and that podcast interview came out Monday. Well, the day before, you win and Tony Finau wins. It's like, wow, good timing.
That's cool. Yeah.
I would encourage you to listen to Boyd's podcast. Okay. It's last week's or this
okay.
week we just did. And it was, I've had so many comments about what Boyd said and how he said it. I can't imagine you being with a better instructor in golf right now. It just, Boyd is amazing. And I think he understands the simplicity of your golf swing, the repeatability of your golf swing. We didn't talk much about your golf swing, but he did mention you. And I was thinking, you know what? I need to get Taylor back on here, especially as well as he's been playing, because it's like, why do you and Boyd work so well together?
Yeah, I mean, kind of to your point of simplicity, you know, it's so, I mean, the ultimate goal in this game almost is like to make things as simple as possible. I mean, I know golf can be so complex, and the golf swing can be overwhelming at times, and there's a million different ways to do it. There's a million different things to think about. And, you know, I know my game, and I know I'm at my best when, you know, I'm out of my way and I'm not thinking, right? I think there's only a handful of guys that do better when they have more in their mind, you know? And so making the game as simple as possible is always going to be the goal. And, you know, I know that I'm at my best when I'm not a mechanical guy with the golf swing. Like I'm more like feels, and like I envision, and I'm more reactive and try to be more athletic with how I go about stuff. And I'd seen how Boyd, before we had started working together, I'd seen how he taught guys, and, you know, he wasn't teaching a move. He wasn't teaching a swing. He would take the guys that he was working with and see what they did. And all right, let's figure out how to improve what you're already good at. And then your challenges or things that you're not great at, how do we get you competent there? You know? And, you know, for me, I've always been a good iron guy, and off the tee is kind of has been, you know, the thing that has caused me the most fits over the years. And, you know, he's been able to just simplify my tee balls, and that's been a focus for us. And we are cut from the same cloth in a lot of ways. And, you know, he's been in my shoes in a lot of instances. So he knows, you know, when I'm on, you know, like this last week in Singapore, there was, you know, three or four, you know, tee balls I was really uncomfortable with. And, you know, he understands, like, in those moments, because he's been there, of like, okay, I just got to get something that's going to get me in play. It might not look pretty. It may not be the perfect shot, but, like, how do we get you comfortable in those uncomfortable moments? What can we do? What kind of swings can we make? What kind of shots can we hit? And so just him and I being on the same page and simplifying the game and making it about shot making rather than swing making, that, like, we hit it off in those ways.
Well, he's brilliant that way. And by the way, I don't know if you've played much golf with Boyd, but at one time he had an amazingly athletic golf swing, and he crushed it. He hit it out there a long way and had a touch around the greens you can't believe. I once remember an instructor said this. He said, I see my role as a teacher to understand the complexity of the golf swing, but to teach the simplicity. So it's like, it is a complicated move, but it's really what I want to do is show the guy how simple it is. Your move is about as repeatable as anybody that plays pro golf. And you were that way in college. You really were. But you weren't obviously as skilled as you are now. And so, but he's teaching your simplicity. I think that's absolutely wonderful. And listen to his podcast. It was really good.
I will. Yeah, for sure.
So you won in Adelaide by a bunch, and you had a little bit of a hiccup there in the final round where you made a double bogey, but you got over that and got through it. And I guess it was bound to happen. You couldn't go, you couldn't go a whole week, I guess, with everything perfect. But your caddy,
correct,
Malcolm Baker, is from about 15 or 20 minutes from where you won that tournament in Adelaide. Tell me about that. First of all, he's been on the bag since 2017. You won a lot of money, let's face it, over the last 2 weeks. And he's probably the highest paid caddy in the consecutive week in history of golf, I would
say. Yeah, it's crazy. We were talking about it. He's made more money in these last 2 weeks than I did on my rookie year on PGA Tour. And I didn't have a bad rookie year on the PGA Tour. So, yeah, man, it was so special, winning in Adelaide, for him, with him. You know, we got on the stage, all the live tournaments, there's a podium that they present the trophies to at the end of the tournament. And we get on stage and he had an Australian flag, clothed over his back. And so, just so, so cool. He absolutely loves and has a passion for caddying, for his craft and for the game of golf. And he's passionate about his home country. And so, to be able to get the win, and just with the all the hype of the week, you know, it was very, very, the energy was huge, and it was a highly anticipated within LIV and, you know, within the really the whole golf world. It felt like all the eyes of golf were on Adelaide that week. And so everything, you know, with that being said, I mean, it was just, it made it that much more special to win that week for Mal, you know. So it was an awesome moment.
That's wonderful. And it's like, you think about it, those are probably the best crowds you've played in front of at LIV, I'm sure. They were amazing,
because yeah,
I saw,
sure,
their highlights. It was kind of crazy.
Yeah.
But you know, you talked about Mal. You said his craft. When I was your age or younger, well, I was probably younger, but caddies would kind of knock about here and there. They would show up or they wouldn't show up. It was like there weren't very many truly professional caddies. I think it's a profession nowadays. I think it's a true profession. I think they're amateur psychologists. I think they have got to get their work right, or you're not going to let them work for you anymore. And he's obviously a professional. Would you say that?
Oh, for sure. You know, he takes pride in what he does, and he's one of the best in his professions at what he does. And you know, in any industry, whenever there's, plainly put, when there's this much money to be had, when there's this much money to be made, the competition is going to grow, right? And so I think that's why over the last, you know, since Tiger, basically, the caddy game has changed. And it's because, you know, now you can go make a really, really good living being a caddy. And so, you know, people that decide to go and do that, they want to take advantage of an opportunity. And so you got to be good at what you do, or, you know, you're going to be looking for another job. And so it there's no doubt that, you know, it's changed significantly over the last few decades. And it's great. You know, they're viewed, you know, as part of the team. You know, they're not just someone who carries the bag now. You know, like you said, they're, you know, depending on the caddy, but more so than not, you know, they are amateur psychologists. You know, they're there. I always joke people, I'm like, you know, I spend more time with my caddy than my own wife, you know, so we better not only get along, but we better communicate well. You know, we better be on the same page with a lot of things. And, you know, it's been a blessing to have him on the bag for the last six years. And, you know, hopefully we're just getting going.
Yeah, that's great. Well, you know, and you followed up with a victory in Singapore. That must have felt good to back up a great week with another great week. And a little over $9 million in 2 weeks. That's kind of unthinkable when you were a kid, I'm sure. You were trying to get per diem money to you know, we were at OSU just to get from one week to the next. So congratulations on that. But you know, your world ranking is right at 60. Is that correct right now?
Mm-hmm,
and so
correct.
If the cutoff date for the U.S. Open today, you would be in the U.S. Open, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
But
right.
you're not going to be playing in the next PGA Tour event. And you didn't get any world ranking points for either of these victories. So your ranking is obviously going to fall a little bit, and you're not going to be in the U.S. Open unless what happens. What have you got to do? And we talked about this before the interview, so I want to hear.
Yeah. So, I've had a few, obviously this is PGA Championships in a couple of weeks, and if I go play well there, that will, boost my world ranking and would, get me into the US Open. And I've had a few people like yourself that have asked, what do you have to do at the PGA to, secure that top 60 world ranking and against the US Open? And I'm not very good at this, that's kind of stuff. Like, that's kind of beyond me. But not only that, like, I know, to go and play well there, like, thinking about what I got to do, like, that's not going to put me in a great spot to go and do well. And so I've coined the term, the rule of 67. And whenever I say that, people are like, okay, what's rule 67? I said, well, go shoot more 67s and everything will be okay. In our world, numbers don't lie. And if you go play good golf, all the stuff that we have questions about or concerns about, or we don't know what the results are going to be, or we don't know, we need to figure out what we got to do to accomplish this or that or whatever. It's, man, good golf takes care of everything. And so, at the PGA, I don't know what I need to do to get into the US Open, but I know the rule of 67 is going to prevail. Go shoot a few 67s and I think everything will take care of itself.
It does. So I'm going to go back to 2011. You were a freshman. You literally, other than Peter Uihlein, when we played nationals at Carson Creek, you were our second best player, and you'd come from the five man in the fall. You finished great at the regional. You played good at the conference. I mean, you were playing your best golf. And I remember Jim Holtgreve, who was going to be the Walker Cup captain that year, was at Carson Creek watching the national championship. He came up to me after the tournament. He said, "I really, really was impressed with your freshman, Taylor Gooch." I said, "Oh, thanks." I said, "Yeah, I hope he plays well this summer because I think he could be on your Walker Cup team." And he said, "Would it be okay if I got his cell phone from you?" And I thought to myself, "Gosh, I wish I just didn't even see him today. I don't want Taylor to, I don't want Taylor to talk to Jim Holtgreve." But I said,
Right.
"Sure, I'll tell him." So I told you that, I'd given him your cell phone. He might be contacting you, which was okay. And I thought this might be a good way for Taylor to learn. But all of a sudden, you thought you had to do something to get on the Walker Cup team. And how'd you play that summer?
I didn't play as great as I had played toward the end of the season, and I had, all these other things on my mind, and I started putting this added pressure, on myself and my game. And it was, a quick lesson to learn of, if you want to go play well, going and thinking about all that comes with it is, it's the opposite of everything I've, spoken about earlier. So the opposite of the process. You start thinking about results, you're probably not going to get great results.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I wanted to bring that up because it was something we didn't talk about the first time you were on this podcast. It was like,
Yeah.
I think, I don't know if I should have let you learn that lesson the way you had to learn it, but I think it maybe worked out for you pretty well because I don't think you get on the Walker Cup team because you're thinking about the Walker Cup team. I think you get on the Walker Cup team because you're just playing good golf and getting better every day. And so anyway, you didn't go into these two tournaments, the LIV events in Adelaide and Singapore, thinking, "Gosh, if I'll just play well, maybe I could." No, you just did your process, and that's an overused word, but it is what it is. And you are better now than you were 5 years ago. You'll be
Correct.
better in
Yeah,
5 years. Yeah. Okay, so that's a good lesson for young kids to learn on this podcast. Thank you. So I think you'll be in the U.S. Open because I think you're playing well enough to get there, and I think your ranking will stay there. That's great. You are playing in the PGA, which is great. You earned that, which is wonderful. Let's go back to another major this year, the Masters at Augusta, Georgia, which I get a little tingle every time I think about it, having players that have played there. You dreamed about it when you were a little kid. You talked about it in college. Someday I want to play in the Masters, and it finally happened. Talk about it.
Yeah, so I mean, it was obviously a super cool week, and it was actually my second Masters. So I
Yeah.
played last year, and I didn't have quite as good of a year this year as I did last year. I think I finished like 13th or 14th last year, and I finished 34th or
Fourth,
5th or something
34th.
like
Yeah.
that. Yeah, and again, it just goes back to what I've kind of talked about so far is. I played a lot better than the result turned out at Augusta, and so that was a little bit frustrating because I really did play really well, and I had a couple on Sunday I had a couple wind gusts that cost me, and I had a couple putts that, just didn't drop that cost me. It was kind of one of those Sundays and one of those weeks where I was like, I feel like I was beating my head against the wall because I was playing better than what, I was getting out of the game. And so, that part was frustrating, but I mean, Sunday at Augusta is tough to beat, man. I mean, it's so special. It's the crowds are amazing. Obviously, the Masters roars, Augusta roars from the crowds. It's different, And I had, all my family, my parents and my wife and child and Kelsey Klein and I had a really good group of people that I care and love about that were there and to share those moments with the people that you love and doing something that you've dreamed about since you were, a kid it's tough to beat. And, I always tell people when I was 5 years old, my sister was born April 11th, 1997. And that was on a Friday and Sunday, Tiger Woods wins his first Masters. And so it's one of my earliest memories and earliest thoughts of wanting to do something was watching Tiger win the Sunday after my sister was born. And so it's hallowed grounds, that place.
So I'm gonna do some math here. You ready? Guy drives it long, really long. A guy's a great iron player and a tremendous putter. Could he win at Augusta?
Yes.
That's you, Taylor. Come on. I mean, you can win at
Yeah.
Augusta. There's a day where it could be a possibility. You've got all the things that it takes to win at Augusta. And I'm just going doing the math. I don't think the Corey Pavins or Scott Verplanks, God bless them, but they're just not long enough. You're long. You're a great iron player. You're a great putter. It's like, wow, that adds up to me. If you're doing math, that adds up to that guy should compete there one day. So I think he will. You'll be back. You'll be back. Okay. So before we move on, you mentioned your wife a couple of times, Allie, and your daughter, Collins. And Collins is going to turn two this summer. Are you, I know you're a girl, Dad. Are you a hopelessly madly in love with this little girl and going to make her a golfer and the whole works? What's going on with Collins these days?
I mean, yes, I'm definitely a girl dad, and she's definitely got me wrapped around her finger. And I do have a couple little golf clubs around, and I have a one of those little perfect practice putting mats that, while I'm at the house, I'm always hitting putts on and, just tinkering around on that. And so she is seeing that, and she has been getting her little putter and plastic ball and like hitting it around and stuff. And it's moments like that that definitely give you a different perspective on life and what makes you happy. And it's been cool, obviously being a father. And I don't really care if she takes up golf or not. Obviously, it'd be cool to share something with her. I joke with people, I have a group of friends that I grew up with since we were 5 years old that we're still tied together. We grew up playing football, baseball, basketball together. And there's a handful of us that are now fathers, and we used to always joke back in high school, not joke, we were serious. It's like, we're gonna have kids one day, and our kids are gonna be the greatest athletes, and they're gonna do X, Y, and Z. And now that we all see how this, this whole professional athletics thing looks, and we're now like, our kids are going to be the greatest book readers. They're gonna be so smart and blah blah blah. And so, I it'll obviously be super cool if she plays golf and she's going to have the opportunity, but obviously more importantly than that, she's going to read some books.
Well, that's good. Read books. I wish more kids did. I think that this generation needs more of that. They're losing it because it's like a cell phone and quick little hits of, but I think reading a book is great. It's great. You'll get to spend more time with her if she does play golf. Now remember that. You'll get to spend more
That's
time.
true.
Okay.
That's
So,
right.
and I talked to Charles Howell about his son that, I mean, Charles, you see
Oh.
him every week, but he is a dad, I'm telling you. And
Oh yeah.
I think he's really, really, I think he's a great dad. And It's funny, all those players I coached at Oklahoma State all those years, and just about all of them now have kids. And it's like, wow, you just see the circle of life and how it goes. It's pretty amazing. But I just wanted to get a little update there on Collins. And
Yeah,
I think,
that's cool seeing that.
Does Allie play golf?
No, she does not.
Good,
No,
good
she
for
does
her.
not. Yeah, correct.
Good for her. All right.
Yeah.
So one other thing that's intrigued me is you started a foundation. So I want you to talk about the foundation. I know you've got three or four very, very important recipients of your charity from the foundation. And let's talk about all of those if we could.
Yeah.
Like the Positive Tomorrows. Talk about Positive Tomorrows.
Yeah, so I got introduced to Positive Tomorrows a couple years back, and it's a school, but it's not a public school. It's not a charter school. It's actually kind of the first of its kind, and so it's for homeless kids. It's 6 months to sixth grade is the age group, right? And so when I say homeless, it's, you know, kids that are living on, you know, a friend's couch, or are actually at the homeless shelter, or are living under a bridge. Like they go and they find, you know, any homeless kid that they can, and they bring them in, and they, you know, they clothe them, they feed them twice a day, send them, you know, home from school with a heavy snack. And, you know, they do incredible, incredible things. I mean, they change these kids' lives and, you know, give them opportunities. And, you know, all the studies will show, you know, if we can help, you know, shape a kid's life early on, you know, in those elementary years, like that's laying a great foundation for success later on in life. And so for me, you know, when my wife and I have talked for years about, you know, doing a foundation of some sort, you know, we've always talked about, of course, wanting to be, you know, have golf be a part of it, but that not be the only focus. You know, we want to, you know, have a hand in shaping the next generation and giving, you know, less fortunate kids opportunity. And how can we, you know, help uplift society? And that's, you know, from the youth. And so Positive Tomorrows, you know, for us is an incredible group that we're going to continue to support and help and hopefully have a positive impact on as many kids as possible.
I heard a quote one time. That's incredible, by the way, Taylor. I heard a quote one time that said, 100 years from now, it won't matter what my bank account was, what kind of car I drove, or how big my house was, but the world's going to be a better place because I was important in the life of a child. Now, I bet somebody at Positive Tomorrows has heard that, but I know they're living by it. So it's great that you're attached to that. What about Hope is Alive? Tell me about Hope is Alive.
Yeah, so Hope is Alive is for addiction rehabilitation. And so it's unique though. You know, any type of an addiction facility, you know, across the country, you know, it's they don't have very high success rates. It's such a challenging, you know, situation, and they kind of haven't figured out how to be successful yet. And Hope is Alive is easily the most successful organization across the country when it comes to having, you know, someone go through the program and come out on the other side. And what's so cool about what they do is, you know, they, you know, of course, we, you know, as humans, like we are always going to need to fill a void. That's just how us as fallen beings are. And so what's cool about Hope is Alive is, you know, a deep part of, you know, their rehabilitation process is through our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. And so, you know, it's cool that they bring in these people that have no hope, and they fill this void, and they're able to introduce them to, you know, Jesus, and he is the hope, and it's a way for, you know, them to become sober. And, you know, we can't do it ourselves, and we don't want to do it ourselves. We need, you know, guidance from our Lord. And so that they are just an incredible, incredible organization. And the difference that they're making in, families, you know, and kids. There's so many stories, success stories of a mother or father that has, you know, lost, you know, a relationship with a child because of their addiction, and they bring them in and they, you know, have gotten clean and sober and have rekindled the relationship with their family. And it's just, it's really, really inspiring. And it's truly Hope is Alive is not only the name, but it's what they live by. Like, Hope is Alive, like He is alive, and He's here with us. And it's just an incredible organization. And Lance and Allie Lang are close friends of Allie, my Allie and me. And they run the organization, and they started it over 10 years ago. And so they're doing incredible stuff, and they've spread outside of Oklahoma. They started in Oklahoma. They have houses all throughout Oklahoma. And so when you enter the program, you enter into a house. And what's really cool about the organization too is everyone that is employed within the organization, nearly everyone has gone through the program themselves. And so it's this kind of circle of life of, you know, they enter the program, they have success. And when they exit, they have not an opportunity to work within the organization. So it's just really, really cool. And they're making a huge difference in lives all over the country. And it's awesome.
Beautiful. Wonderful. That's great. And a third one that you love to support is something that was really big in your youth, and that's the Oklahoma Junior Golf Tour. Maury Rose, the executive director of that, will be retiring after this year. And Maury will be in the Oklahoma Golf Hall of Fame, which I'm so thrilled. And I'm going to the induction ceremony. So thrilled. Maury made a big difference in your life. And talk about why the OJGT is important to you.
Yeah, I mean, so Maury, you know, when I was 10 years old, started the OJGT, and it was the first time, and what I'm aware of, and you might know better than me, there was never a fall golf, right? It
never,
was spring
never.
Golf, and then, you know, spring school golf, and then summer South Central golf. That's right. So he came in and filled a void. And he forever changed the trajectory of Oklahoma junior golf because of it, you know, and the impact that he had it can't be overstated, you know. And so I wouldn't be the player that I am without, you know, the OJGT. And, you know, I obviously being from Oklahoma and still living in Oklahoma and loving where I'm from and loving my people, like I, you know, and loving junior golf, like I want to do whatever we can to make sure, you know, kids have, you know, the opportunity to play golf and, you know, hone their craft and get better. And, you know, I love seeing kids from Oklahoma have success, you know, on a large scale. And so I want to make sure that that's going to, you know, be, just continue to grow. You know, I want the golf, the quality of golf in Oklahoma to continue to increase. And so that's what we're going to try to do.
Well, I appreciate you doing that. In fact, I first saw you at one of Maury's tournaments at Dornick Hills. I'll never forget that day, you and Corey Whitsett on the first tee. But Maury has been a dear friend of mine. I gave his son Dayton golf lessons when I was at Kicking Bird. And then Dayton came and played for Coach Holder and I at Oklahoma State. And but I love Maury. I'm thrilled that he's finally going to get to take a break because he's just been going at it for a long time, over 20 years.
Stop.
And but so that's a wonderful, wonderful, you know, organization to help. But one final thing is this year, you got your foundation's name, the Tiger or the Taylor Gooch Foundation, will be on an AJGA event in Oklahoma. Talk about that. I know you're proud of that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, you know, AJGA, everyone, you know, in junior golf knows AJGA. And so when they approached us about possibly coming to Oklahoma, and I was like, you know, how can we be a part of it? You know, this is a dream come true. I played, you know, so many AJGA events as a junior golfer. And so just to be a part of it and to, you know, be able to host, you know, the first one for the foundation here at Gilardi and Edmond, it's a dream come true and an opportunity to continue to, you know, have a focus on junior golf in Oklahoma and give kids opportunity. And yeah, it's just super cool. And golf is, you know, golf has been such a blessing to me and my family, and we want to, you know, pay it forward and try to be a blessing back to the golf world, and especially here in Oklahoma. So we will continue to make that a focus of the foundation.
You know, junior golf was big to me when I was a high school golf coach and a junior golf director at Kicking Bear. I always loved junior golf in Oklahoma. So anything, in my opinion, that can benefit junior golfers, get kids interested in the game, promote the game, push kids forward in the game, will be good for our society some way or another. I mean, you know, a parent was asking me a week or so ago, oh, he's such a nice boy. And oh, that kid's such a nice kid. And I said, well, yeah, we're out here on a golf course. Most of the kids are pretty good kids and they're learning good values and they're learning cheating is the worst thing you can do. And they're, I mean, it's like there's so many good things being taught. It's like it sounds a little cliche and a little pie in the sky and all that. But quite frankly, it's a big deal to get kids involved in golf.
No doubt. I mean, the like I said, it's cliche, but it's cliche for a reason. You know, the values, the life skills, it's just going to grow you as an individual and turn you into a better human than you were previous to golf. So, yeah, I mean, it's like I said, that's why it's always going to be a focus for us. You know, I know and I've seen the impact that golf has on, you know, the kid and what it does for you as a child and the things that it teaches you so that, you know, you're better off in life. It's why it's my favorite game and the greatest game I think there is.
Well, that's great. And when is that tournament with your foundation's name on it? When is it?
It's the end of July, last week of July.
Very good. Okay. Speaking of upcoming events though, you just played in two great events where you won in the Southwest, Southeast Asia, you know, way down there, a long way down there. You got a tournament a little closer to home, a LIV event coming up May 12th through the 14th. Talk about where it is. How can people get tickets? How can they come watch you play? I know Oklahomans are going to show up to watch you play.
Yeah, it's going to be so cool to have a home game kind of, you know, Oklahoma, as you know, has had some major championships, which is great. But this will obviously be the first of its kind in Tulsa at Cedar Ridge, which I haven't played since high school. I played the USAM at Southern Hills, and the other stroke play course was Cedar. And I was actually just telling someone, I think I shot 77-67 in the stroke play portion to get into the match play. But when I shot 67 at Cedar, I think I hit five or six greens, and I made everything. Colton Sags was on the bag for me. He'll tell you I made everything that day. But yeah,
you don't have to tell me. I was there watching. I was recruiting you.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And so it's just gonna be super cool. I'm excited for Oklahomans to be able to, you know, see what LIV is up close and in person, and I know how much fans enjoy the events, and you know, I know Oklahomans are gonna love it. And you know, it's going to be cool to have a bunch of support. You know, our foundation is going to have a presence there next week in Tulsa. We have a hospitality suite that all the proceeds, all the ticket sales are going to go to the foundation. And so it'll be really cool to, you know, raise a bunch of money for the foundation and bring a bunch of awareness to the foundation and who we've partnered with and what we do. And it's going to be just a cool week in every way. And, it'd be especially cool if we can, kind of continue this momentum and, play some good golf.
Well, I hope you play well. I really do. I wish I could be there. I'll be at the regional tournament with the Baylor Bears out in South Santa Rosa, California. The Cowboys are going to be at Las Vegas. And so I won't be there, but I know somebody that's been important in both of your life and mine. That's Kelsey Klein, who's the executive director of your foundation. I was a mentor to Kelsey, and Kelsey's been a mentor to you. You want to talk about paying it forward and doing the right thing? That's what the game of golf has done. I've known Kelsey since he was 10, and I've known you since you were about 12, and Kelsey's known you since you were a little baby. So it's like, this is a really cool thing, and I know you love having Kelsey help you with the foundation.
Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, been a big brother mentor to me, you know, basically my whole life. And, you know, he similar to you, and, you know, so such a selfless individual. And cares for people and wants people to do good and wants to do good for people. And so, you know, when this opportunity came about to start a foundation, you know, immediately I'm like, Kelsey's going to be my man. He's going to be involved, and I wouldn't want anybody else for the job. And I know that he's going to love it, and he loves on people so well, and so it was such a match made in heaven. And man, it's been again, this last, you know, few years have taught me a lot of things. One of the things that it's taught me is you know, to dream bigger, because there's things that have happened that, you know, I didn't dream about. I didn't think that I could have a foundation, you know, and didn't even dream of that being possible. And the impact that we could make and bringing people along for the journey. And yeah, it's been, like I said, such a blessing, and Kelsey being involved is just incredible. So it's been fun, and you know, we keep kind of pinching ourselves along this journey, because it's just so cool, and you know, we're excited for the future.
Well, I'm glad you're able to do that with Kelsey. He and I still stay in touch. And if you're a good friend of Kelsey's, you will be in touch. He does not lose connectivity with people. He's amazing about
That's
that.
right.
But I want to tell you, for my podcast listeners, how proud I am of you, because the maturity that you've had over the last 10 years has been unparalleled. What you've done, how you've changed, how you've your perspective is amazing. I think a lot of people need to get to know who you are. I'm very, very proud to say I coach Taylor Gooch at Oklahoma State, and what you're doing with that foundation is it doesn't surprise me one bit.
I appreciate it, Coach. It wouldn't none of this would have happened without people like you and Kelsey, and you know, obviously Maury Rose and a lot of others along the way. So it's all about relationships, and at the end of the day, and it was a blessing to have you as a coach.
Well, thank you very much. I want to encourage everybody, all my listeners, if you're in or around Oklahoma, go over to Cedar Ridge and Broken Arrow and watch the event. He's going for a three-peat right now, but we're not going to try to win. We're just going to go through the process to win, right?
That's right. That's right. See if we
All
get
right.
that first fairway on Friday.
There you go. Well, have a great week, and thanks again, Taylor, for joining me today.
Thanks, Coach.